Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, I'll continue my discussion with Dr. Shannon Sims on the use of AI or artificial intelligence in clinical practice. Shannon, recent scrutiny of AI-based facial recognition software has renewed concerns about unintended effects of AI on social bias and inequity. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, as I mentioned in part one of the podcast, I worry about this quite a bit. I think it's our jobs as clinicians first to do no harm and secondarily to actively right wrongs where we see them. And so let's talk about this a little bit. The first thing I want to talk about is statistical bias. So let's compare and contrast that with social bias. Statistical bias means you got your methodology wrong. So you designed your data science approach wrong, or maybe you just got the math wrong. Or the third option is that you got your data set wrong, meaning that the data set you're working on isn't an appropriate data set to actually develop a machine learning model, whether that's used to predict or to understand. So an example of that would be if you're developing, let's say, looking at dialyzed patients. So these are patients with kidney failure who require multiple times per week dialysis. If you're looking at a cohort of patients that's predominantly Caucasian and older, then whatever data set you're working on might not be appropriately developing models for those of different races or who come from a younger cohort. So that's an example of what statistical bias might look like. In contrast to statistical bias, social bias means that those machine learning approaches that include bias actually harm certain subsets of folks. And that could be subsets of folks based on race, gender, or age, for example, or many other sociodemographic characteristics. An example of social bias is myocardial infarction or heart attacks in older women. We know that older women experience symptoms of myocardial infarctions or heart attacks differently than other younger or male patients, meaning that they don't present in the usual way that's more recognizable to many clinicians. And so what could happen is if you're building a machine learning approach based on a cohort of patients like older women experiencing heart attacks, because the clinicians have inherently already made biased decisions, in other words, not evaluating them for a heart attack because they don't recognize the symptoms, that data set might build a bad model because the machine learning approach looks at the data and says, oh, older women with these symptoms are probably not a heart attack, so we won't predict that they should evaluate that patient for a heart attack. And in that way, what you can have is some social bias, meaning harm to those women because the machine learning algorithm didn't appropriately predict the right workup for them.
So why do AI algorithms automate and perpetuate bias?
They perpetuate bias primarily because they are beholden to the data that they have. The beauty of machine learning approaches are that they have no inherent biases. They only look at data. The flip side is that they're amoral and they have no common sense, meaning that if the data reflects bias that's already happened, so you treat certain kinds of patients differently, the machine learning algorithm can only work upon that. And that's the problem.
So how do we mitigate bias in AI?
There are a couple of ways that we can do this. First and foremost, we need to be aware of it. When we as clinicians evaluate these machine learning algorithms and how they're applied, we need to make sure we're evaluating, hey, is this machine learning algorithm going to be great for all patients? Is it great for a subset? And if it's great for a subset, which patients should we be particularly cautious or should we avoid using it on? That's number one. Number two, there are some technical ways that we can avoid bias. There are some automated algorithms out there that you can apply to machine learning approaches that will try to tease out whether or not there's social bias inherent in the machine learning models. A second technical approach that you can do is you can try to get upstream of clinical decision-making. In other words, look at more raw data. Just look at vital sign data or symptoms, as opposed to looking at things like decisions that were made in response to those symptoms. So instead of looking at orders, you just go look at their vital sign data, their imaging results, etc. And in that way, you get around that sort of biased decision-making that's already happened.
So Shannon, I can understand where machine learning helps me with insight, but what about thinking out of the box and innovation? Don't you think it probably would inhibit it?
I think that's a great question, Tom. One of the things that you and I in our training era is the notion of cookbook medicine always comes up. In the context of electronic medical records or things like order sets and decision support, are we just creating physician robots, essentially, and therefore stifling free thinking? And in the same way, I think what you're saying is, could this machine learning be stifling creative approaches to clinical care? My response to that is, I think that we do more good than harm. I think there's a risk that we will stifle creativity or stifle appropriate clinical innovation. But I think at the end of the day, these tools provide more good than harm. I think they enable innovation more than they harm it.
Thank you for that. So does AI change provider behavior?
Tom, you know as many docs as I do. What changes provider behavior, really? I think there are a couple of reasons that it hasn't been widely adopted here. One reason is that clinicians, and I'll use doctors as an example, we're not routinely trained in these kinds of quantitative methods. It's not a big part of our training to understand how to evaluate a machine learning approach, how to integrate it into our workflow in the same way that, say, we think about diseases or drugs or microbiology. A second thing that I think is important in thinking about how we get providers to use these is that we have to demonstrate benefit. And because AI are still these toddlers running around, it's not clear how beneficial they are. There have been a lot of high-profile examples of big companies like IBM Watson that have promised the sun and the moon and haven't quite delivered. And so I think there's an inherent skepticism amongst the provider community that's going to have to be a cultural norm that we get around in order to enable these models to be successful. But at the end of the day, I think with time and with evidence that it works, and as long as they understand exactly why they work and why they should use them, I think we can get providers to start using them in a meaningful way.
So Shannon, you keep on hearing in opportunities about patient self-care and self-treatment. Can AI be used as an opportunity towards changing patient behavior?
That's the million-dollar question, Tom. I think we'd all like to know what influences patient behavior. We're all wearing Fitbits or Apple Watches and we're all still fat, so I'm not sure exactly how machine learning changes that dynamic. In a more serious vein, I do think there's the capability there. Can we provide insights or can we better understand what might influence patient behavior? But again, at the end of the day, these are math-based algorithms that help people make decisions. And at the end of the day, all of us as patients have to decide if we're going to eat healthy, exercise, make decisions that affect our health in other ways. So it's my personal view that it's a long walk. They certainly can be another arrow in the quiver, but I don't think it's going to be a magic pill that magically solves that problem.
Can it be used for chronic care management?
So this is where machine learning really shines, is in large swaths of data. So a lot of data, a lot of people, and trying to predict what will influence those populations at the aggregate level. So yes, I do think this is one of the areas where machine learning can be most helpful. If you're an organization or even a single, let's say, care management nurse who has to make decisions about where to spend your time, then I think machine learning can be really useful because it can help you understand where you should dedicate limited resources. And that could be resources of people's time. It could be use of community-based resources like Meals on Wheels, those kinds of things. So I think machine learning, getting back to that, helping us understand and then predict where interventions will work, chronic care management is the perfect setting for that. And we've seen lots of examples where that's been useful. I think on the flip side, this notion of value-based care, while it's not going anywhere, these are very difficult problems to solve. You have the patient behavior problem crops up again, but they're also, we have to align the financial and organizational incentives such that these machine learning algorithms can be successful. So at the end of the day, I worry that the organizational approach has to be right and the machine learning can be a tool that can really help them be successful in chronic care settings.
Yeah, I certainly see lots of potential. So what would you recommend that our members know now and what should they keep under the radar?
Yeah, my honest advice for members would be the following. One, keep your teams with their fingers on the pulse of this. What I mean by that is figure out somebody in your organization who has a native interest in this and who might have some proclivity for data and the statistics and methodology stuff. And that person with that native interest and aptitude for it, carve out a little bit of time for him or her to be able to spend time on this on behalf of your organization. If you're a bleeding edge organization, maybe that person can identify, hey, we should be using these vendors or these academically based machine learning models that have been published, this would be applicable for us. If you're a little bit more conservative or you don't like to be on the cutting edge of things, then I would sit tight and just keep your eyes out there and see what's working. I would wait for demonstrated successes, whether that's at the organizational or the individual patient or chronic care disease level. Keep your eyes out. I don't think that there are any magic bullets, and I would definitely be wary of vendors or others promising the world to you. Be very careful about evaluating that return on investment that you make. And then lastly, here at Vizient, we're going to keep you updated. We have a lot of data science experts like myself and a whole team of data scientists whose job it is to keep apprised of what's going on in the field and to make sure our members stay informed and aware of opportunities to improve.
Shannon, we've reached the end of our discussion. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. I appreciate your insights. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, and send your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast in the latest healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.